Ugh, I'm not in the mood. Do we have to do this?
Yes.
Wait, are we recording? Okay, let's go. You're listening to The Allie Colbert Show. Welcome back to The Allie Colbert Show. Thanks for joining us.
How's everybody doing? I just got back from New York.
Great trip to New York. Amazing shows. Thanks everybody for coming out and enjoying the shows and laughing and saying hi. It was a delight.
Back in Los Angeles
for the next few weeks. And then next week, Wednesday, I'll be in Sacramento, July 19th. July 20th, San Francisco at Cobb's Comedy. I'll be in the Hamptons for August 3rd and August 11th and 12th, Seattle. You can get all those tickets on my website, alliecolbert.com. Come on out. Watched a lot of movies when I was home in Connecticut visiting my parents. My sister came home with me. And what did we watch? We watched, this is how I know I'm running out of shows. I need a show, new show, folks, because I'm going into old movies. I'm playing a little bit of catch up with what I heard was good, but I need new content. I need to get hooked on a new show. I've tried some shows that are just not, like I tried Yellowstone that like didn't hit. And I put in some time. I really invested in that, but it wasn't working. But I watched The Good Nurse. I know I'm late to that game, which is sort of Dr. Death-esque. And that I really liked. And I was like, okay, I like psychological thrillers. So let me Google like the best psychological thrillers. I then went to watch Zodiac, David Fincher's film from 2007. And I was traumatized. Spoiler, no, I don't know if this is a spoiler. It's been 16 years since the film came out. They haven't caught the Zodiac killer. I wasn't aware of that. Because after 2.5 hours, I couldn't, like, wait for this guy to be fucking just slaughtered, locked away. And then the title card's like, we still haven't found him. And I'm like, fuck. It was such, like, murderous blue balls. Like, I just wanted so badly for, you know, you're like, I can't wait for them to catch him. And for that to never happen, it was like, what do I do with all this cum? Okay. I don't know if that makes sense. Why am I always going for that, like the sexual metaphor? I think I need to push myself to reach for something a little more highbrow. But the banging cast in the Zodiac movie, I mean, Robert Downey Jr., Mark Ruffalo, Jake Gyllenhaal, if you're straight, that's the movie for you. It was fun to watch though, but it was very, I get scared. I'm a baby with movies like that. Like I can't really handle, even if it's not even a horror, like if it's just like a psychologically gripping, I just cry. If something like seems spooky or off, I start crying. I know. Isn't it funny that I'm sort of sensitive and afraid like that? So yeah, I got to find a new show because I flew back to LA and I really had no other option other than to like put myself down for a 5.5 hour nap. I mean, the JetBlue film options, TV options, what are we doing? They have like 8 episodes of Made for Love, that show with the girl that kind of looks like me. And other than that, there's nothing on there I want to watch. I'm also tired of movies being, I think 2.5 hours is too long. I want a movie that's like an hour and 45 minutes max. I just think 2.5 hours and then you get these other movies, you know, the Avatars, The Way of Water, it's like 3.5 hours. This is so long. This is just too much. I want to commit to something short and sweet. We should be able to make something happen like that, you know, without having to watch like a Disney movie. Anyway, thanks for coming to shows. That's what I was trying to say. This week we have on the hilarious, the wonderful Kara Klink. Kara Klink, an amazing stand-up comedian and podcaster. Her podcast, That's Messed Up, an SVU podcast. She hosts with Lisa Traeger, wildly popular, and we had a great talk about being a comedian and mothering simultaneously and coming up in stand-up, growing up in Connecticut. Kara was also a page in the NBC Page program, as was I. And it was a great convo. I hope you enjoy it. You can email the show at theallycolbertshow@gmail.com. Subscribe to the podcast, leave a comment, give us 5 stars, and come see me live.
Get those tickets. Can't wait to meet Michael Bertos in person. Cheers.
I live in Venice, which is really surprising to most comedians.
Yeah.
But it's all I know. It's all I knew. When I moved out to LA, I was dating my current partner, and she was living in Marina Del Rey, and her lease was up, and she was like, trust me, if you're going to live anywhere in Los Angeles, you want to live in Venice, you want to live by the water, it's like the best area. Now that I'm here, I do think it's like amazing, but it's also not by anything.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah, so like for shows, like when you go out and do shows at night, are you just like, I got to drive 40 minutes everywhere or what?
Yes.
Yeah.
And I will be selective about shows I do that are farther than like West Hollywood.
Yeah. You got to come do mine again one night when you're feeling it.
I did it when you weren't there.
Oh, shit. That's
like
right.
Like 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, fuck, it was two weeks ago? With your husband. I'm sorry I left you there without him.
No, that's fine. And I actually thought that your husband, what happened with your husband? We had a moment. I'm trying to remember what
happened.
I'm trying to remember what happened. I think him and I had a moment where like we weren't sure if we should hug. And then when I left, because he wasn't sure if he should hug me when I first saw him, and I was like, if someone wants to hug, like I'm yes, I'll hug.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, like whatever, I hug people when I meet them.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
And then when I was when I got off stage, and I was leaving, and I went up to him. And I was like, thank you so much. I'm going to, you know, this was great. And I could tell from his body language, like, he again didn't know.
He's a dumbass.
If
he's
he should like hug. And he was like, bye. And I was like, bye. It was cute. It was cute. It wasn't bad. It was just, I just remember being like, I'm going to talk to you about it. You have a comedy show with your husband. Like, so is your husband a full-time stand-up?
Yeah, are we started?
We're going.
This is it?
Oh, this
Let's
is it.
Let's go, baby. I didn't know if it was like, hi, welcome to Allie Colbert. Like, I don't know. Here we are.
Oh, no. Like, hi, welcome to the Allie Colbert Show.
You don't have to do that on my account. I just
Kara
didn't know we started.
Clank.
Hi.
You know I'm going to have to bring it up at some point.
Yeah, we have to talk about it. The elephant in the room.
I honestly, the fact that I'm bringing this up with you again is like a little embarrassing because I feel like I've done it so many times, but it has to be, I need it for posterity on the pod.
It needs to exist in the Library of Congress. When this podcast goes to the Library of Congress and becomes part of American history.
Yes.
This needs to be part of it.
And then I swear to God, I'll never talk about it again.
I love to talk about it.
Kara's mom was my pediatrician.
So I'm obsessed with that. Like, my mom was always like, you got to look out for this girl, Allie Colbert, that's doing comedy. And I was like, okay, mom. And then I met you and was like, oh, my mom said you used to be her patient. I'm like, that's a HIPAA violation. Like, you're not allowed to really tell me that. I guess you're not a current patient anymore.
Right.
I hope you're not.
No, I'm not. But I remember telling your mom that I was a comedian. Probably must have been a final sort of appointment. I was 17 when I started doing comedy. I think
you started that early? Wow. Yeah,
I know. Psycho. And your mom was like, my daughter does comedy. And also, like, whenever anyone says my daughter does comedy, they, like, don't do comedy.
Right.
So I was like, no, like, my pediatrician's daughter, like, doesn't do comedy. And it turns out, like, you're, like, huge in comedy.
I'm not huge in
you're
comedy.
You're huge
but
in
I
comedy.
Would say I do comedy.
You're huge in comedy. You have a tremendous podcast. You have an amazingly popular podcast. Your stand-up is everywhere. You run an incredible show with you're in the game.
I'm in the game, I will say.
You're in the game.
But that is so funny because when somebody goes, oh, you know, my neighbor's son does comedy. And then you're like, what does he do? And it's like he has one time been to an open mic in another state. You
right.
know,
it's like, nothing. What? I can't connect with someone over
yes.
that.
Yes. But I'm glad that my mom wasn't lying to you.
How's your temperature?
I'm good.
You're good?
I'm good.
Okay.
But do whatever. I can always take
freezing.
A jacket off.
No, it was freezing in here and then I just pumped it up and now I might like smoke us out. So I'm just going to be kind of going back to this checking and that's kind of just, as you can see, the show is really... It's chaotic.
I love it. I love this vibe. I love where we are. I think this is so fun.
This is actually the room where they filmed Room.
How amazing.
Oh, wow. I didn't realize this was fake brick.
Oh, my God.
Until just now.
You know what? I think the kid from Room put this up to make it more
to make
homey.
Exactly.
Make it feel like he could do stand-up comedy. He was like, I need a black, I need a brick background
right,
to do
I
stand-up.
I want to practice my jokes.
I love that. My mom has been the pediatrician for a few of my friends, and a guy I went to college with came to my room one time and was like looking at my photos and was like, your mom was my pediatrician. Like, she's seen my balls. So it's funny. My mom's like a real you know, lady about town in Connecticut, just checking out everybody's
phenomenal
pubes.
Pediatrician. Yeah. Like has a great balance of sort of like that strength and softness.
Yes, I would say my mom is well known because I think not well known, well loved.
No, just say it. She's well known, and you're majoring in comedy.
She's well liked because she has a good bedside manner. There's a lot of great pediatricians that are technically good at the stuff, but they like come at you with like just medical jargon and like don't.
Her bedside manner.
She's good bedside.
Not just saying this because you know her.
I know her a little.
Is phenomenal.
Thank you.
Phenomenal.
I'm gonna make her listen to this.
She's obviously. Is she still practicing there?
Yeah. Okay. She's gone down to part time, thank God. But I don't think she'll ever retire. She's a psycho.
Wow.
She says she's gonna retire. She's like, it's killing me. I gotta stop. I'm like, you'll never stop.
Wait, was she into you doing comedy? Like going for
that?
Oh
yeah, she's been supportive. Yeah.
Just a classic Connecticut upbringing. Yeah. Do whatever you want. We're rich.
No, I mean, like, when I went to college, I was a theater dance major.
Where?
At
Where'd you
Trinity.
Go?
I went to Trinity in Connecticut, actually.
Okay. Hartford.
And in Hartford, yes. And my mom was like, please major in something else besides that as well. And so, like, she was supportive of that, but she was like, so I was a double major in English creative writing as well. So I wouldn't say she was like, do whatever you want.
Right.
But when I started doing, because I worked, I was like in the NBC Page program.
Wait,
I was working
what?
In production.
So was I.
Oh, you were?
Wait,
in LA or New York?
New York.
No way.
You were a Page?
Yeah. Wait, how did we not connect on this ever?
That's really bizarre. When were you a Page?
I mean, I'm older than you.
I know.
I was a Page in, oh my God, help me. 05.
05.
2005.
Okay. I was a Page 10 years later.
Oh my God, 2015?
Yeah.
Oh my God, that's so
wild. Wow, you were a Page.
Wild. You were a Page while I was like older. Wow, that's so crazy.
You were a Page while I was old.
Yeah.
Wait, so this is kind of niche, but this is like a pretty exclusive fraternity to be a part of.
Yeah. How did we not ever figure this out?
Because I was too fucking hard about your mom being my pediatrician that I couldn't like bring up anything
That's
else.
That's all we ever connected on.
Where were you positioned when you were?
So if you don't know about the Page program, you give tours of the NBC studios,
right,
and then you get little assignments throughout. Like you apply for assignments.
Throughout
so,
30 Rock if you're in New York.
Yeah, exactly. So it's like it's cool to get like the SNL assignment because you get to work at SNL or get whatever. So I got an assignment actually at the USA Network. Hello.
Okay.
Started a little bit of my SVU obsession right there.
Oh.
But that was actually cool because I got that really early into the program, so I didn't have to do tours like all the time, you know?
Oh, thank God.
So I got like, it was basically a 9 to 5 and then doing tours on Saturdays and working at SNL at the night. So it was kind of a dream, but it was a boring
6-day work week making no money.
Oh, yeah. You work 6 days a week. You make $10 an hour. I mean, you did when I did it. Maybe they upped
it. No, maybe 11.
On my exit interview, I was like, you guys need to pay people more. You're literally getting just privileged people that can afford to live in New York City on $10 an hour. I luckily have a rent-stabilized apartment. It's the only reason I can afford this. It's a real job.
It's brutal.
Not,
it's
you know,
absolutely
and they make
brutal.
You work 60 hours a week for $10 an hour. It's like you can't survive in New York on that. So I'm like, you're actually limiting the talent that you're getting because you're only getting like rich kids. But anyway.
Right.
I don't know if they took my words to heart because you know who I told? An HR guy who knew my mom. My mom was like, go visit this guy at NBC HR.
Oh.
And he's like, well, what do you got to tell me about the Page program? And I said, here's my thing.
No, they
you guys got to pay
it.
More.
I think maybe $13 an hour.
Oh, that's a step up. It was 10 for sure. And then you get overtime, I guess, if you go over your, which you always over. You always go over 40 hours.
Overtime? I guess you did, hour and a half?
Overtime. Yeah, you got 10 and a half overtime.
Yeah.
So I was in the on-air promo department. So like WWE promos, like SVU, Monk, like all those shows that were on. I was at USA when they did their characters welcome branding. So I did that. And actually that led to me getting a little job with them after like years later. So that was good. But then I was the Conan Page and that was awesome.
You were
so,
the
like,
Conan Page.
So like I was the Conan Page. Yeah.
That's cool.
So I loved that. And I like, you know how you do informational interviews
yeah.
with like all the people?
Yeah.
I did informational interviews with like everybody at Conan and was like, how do I work here? How do I work here? And they were just like, someone has to die. They were just like, everyone that's worked here has worked here forever.
That's
we all
always
love
the
it.
Case.
No, they were like, we think you're great, but
there's
like
no,
no
upward
openings.
Mobility also
yeah.
at any of those companies.
Yeah.
Like I was the Tonight Show Page.
Okay.
Jimmy.
Oh, because Jimmy didn't even exist where I was when it
right,
was there.
Right.
Yeah. The Tonight Show was in California when I was a Page.
Oh my God. Because what? It was Leno over
I think
there?
It was Leno.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we can like probably go back. Do you know the first host of the Tonight Show ever?
Oh, it's not Jack Parr. Who is it? One of the.
I think it was Steve Allen.
Yeah, yeah.
And then Jack Parr.
These are all. This is the trivia we used to all know when we were giving
That's
the tours.
That's so funny. So yeah, I mean, I was at the Tonight Show. I was the Tonight Show desk page.
Yeah.
And a lot of those connections ended up like really helping me down the road. Because I feel that people usually will pursue like a totally freelance job that has nothing to do with the industry and then are like, I'm going to try and make it in my off time. Mm-hmm. Like I'm going to be a waitress or I'm going to babysit, like whatever it is. Or if you are somehow able to juggle having a job like this or then taking a job at a network and pursuing your art, the hope would be that those two paths merge and can kind of serve each other.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, and I didn't, I knew I just want, I was so like, I wish I had like an older friend who like could just help me narrow it down more because I didn't even know when I was a page that I wanted to do comedy.
Yeah.
I was like, I just want to work in comedy. And so I like wanted to work at Conan. Obviously, there was nothing. I ended up getting a job at the Olympics. I worked at the for the Today Show at the Torino Olympics because I speak Italian. So I went over and I was a runner for 6 weeks.
Why do you speak Italian?
Because I studied abroad in Italy and I was obsessed. And I went and I moved there after college for a year before I joined the page program.
Where in Italy? Where in Italy?
Rome. And
that's
I like
amazing.
Made Italian friends and I like forced myself
that's
to learn
awesome.
Italian. So yeah, I'm like
I fucking
obsessed
love Italy.
With Italy. And so I was like a helpful person over at the Today Show because I could speak Italian and none of the other runners, like maybe one other runner could speak Italian. So then after that, I came back and I worked at the USA Network for a minute again. And it was and I still like talked to some of those people, but it was like while I was figuring out what that I wanted to do stand up. And that wasn't really until. Yeah, I didn't start stand-up until I was 27. So, like, not until a couple years out of the page program.
And so, you're still working at USA then, or what?
At that
point. At 27?
No. After
Where
USA,
are you?
Yeah. After USA, I go and I work at this company for this executive who greenlit SpongeBob SquarePants. He started Spike TV. He was, like, a big guy at Viacom.
Okay.
And he had left and
oh my God,
started
Viacom.
His own.
I haven't heard that in, like, so long.
Yeah,
are they
Viacom,
gone?
Baby. No, they still exist, but they're hanging on by a thread.
Yeah.
And so I went from USA to this guy's company, worked for him for 3 years. I was his like that's when I started doing stand up.
Right.
And he put me in like a TV show and he put me like he got me like little bits parts on stuff that
what a fucking
I was doing.
Hookup.
Yeah. So that was very helpful. And then after then everybody got laid off because it was like 2009. And I was like, OK, this is when I'm going to really focus in on the stand up like now. And then I was like on unemployment, doing freelance jobs, babysitting and just fucking grinding out and doing like 4 shows a night. You
and
know?
Are you like, I'm going to just be a fucking stand up?
Yeah.
Like that's the goal. I'm going to tour. And I'm
well,
gonna...
that was, you know, I really want to be a TV writer. Like that's always what I wanted to be like. Yeah. And I have written for television and like I want to write for narrative comedy.
Right.
And so and make TV. And sure, I'd love to be on TV, whatever, but I've kind of like tampered my expectations because that's such a psycho like business.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I always knew I wanted to have kids.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying that you can't be touring with kids and all that. And plenty of people are, Ali Wong, Amy Schumer, but look at the level that they're at. Like the women that have like a family and are really making it solely at stand up are at a certain level. And
right.
So I've never thought, oh, I'm going to be Joan Rivers and on the road at like 65 and 70 like that. I keep doing stand up and I love doing stand up, but it's
how
not
she
my number one.
It.
I don't know. Melissa probably has all the scoop. I don't know if she
Melissa
was.
Probably
I don't know if she was around. Yeah. Like, I don't know how much she was around. I think she was rich and she was probably like I'm sure she brought Melissa on the road. The thing with bringing your kids on the road now that I have kids, I'm like. Great if you have nannies and this and that, but it's like once they're three or four, they're in school. Like they have friends, they have a life. Like
they're people.
I would
have kind of
like,
people.
Yeah, people are like, are you going to bring your daughter to this festival? I'm like, she has like a big art thing at school this week. Like, why would I want to take her away from that? I don't know.
Right.
Like, I think kids do sort of like crave structure. I used to always think about Angelina Jolie and Brad Pitt like flying around the world with all those kids, being like, when are they ever? At like school or
right.
doing, but I guess
they're
maybe
all...
I'm thinking that kids need a boring life that I had, which was just going to grade school for 12 years.
Right. I mean, I totally hear you. Like, it's like, are they being, those kids must be obviously tutored.
Yeah.
At home and they're traveling around. And I guess if they feel some sort of safety in that family unit, they just have an unconventional upbringing.
Yeah. And then they get to see the world. I mean, that's cool too.
It's more traumatic, I think, if they're in like a setup that they keep being interrupt. It keeps being interrupted
yeah.
and being pulled out of. But those
yeah,
kids
yeah.
seem to be sort of just like free floating.
Yeah.
I mean, that is a bizarre thing that she has that many children.
Yeah. Well, my mom had that many children, you know. My mom has six kids.
That's also a bizarre thing.
Yeah, it's bizarre to be a pediatrician and see kids all day and then come home to your own six kids.
Was your dad in the picture?
Yeah.
Your dad's around.
My dad's around.
And your dad is working every day as well?
Well, when we were growing up. Yeah. Okay. Not anymore.
And so, yeah, I mean, was that a free-for-all?
I mean, yeah, it was really wild.
Right.
Like, I have two kids, and I always thought I would have four, and I'm like, I'm done. Like, I'm done. It's so
right.
much.
Right.
It's a lot nowadays, too. It's like everything's fucking expensive. And my parents just would have, like, au pairs from Ireland come.
We would have au pairs,
They just
too.
Live in your house, and you'd pay them pocket money.
Yeah.
And that's who would watch their six kids. Like,
right.
Now
it's like just
to...
like a 17-year-old who's like, I really want to be in America for 1 year.
No. Oh my God. Our Irish au pairs came to our weddings. They came to my brother. They just came to my brother's wedding. They came to my, one of them came to my wedding.
That, I love that.
Yeah.
Oh
so
my
like,
God.
We're still close with them.
Yeah. We are close to our au pairs. And I do remember that being like, but my mom didn't work.
Well, that's funny. My parents like literally needed someone because they were both
my
working.
Mom was fully at home with us.
How many kids?
Three kids.
Okay.
And my mom had an au pair.
Okay.
And I think my dad was never around.
Okay, well, so your mom needed a little help.
My mom needed it. My dad was always at work, traveling for work, cheating on her.
Oh, wow.
And I guess so I was raised by the au pair.
Yeah.
Now I'm being a little facetious, but... Yeah, the au pair life. Wait, I just was about to say something about the au pair life, and then I lost it.
You know...
Oh, kids.
Yeah.
I mean, I can't... I don't even know how to get into the subject. It's
Do you
so
want them?
This is, like, such a big issue in my life right now. I don't want to call it an issue, but it's a crossroads.
Mm-hmm.
Because... Have I told you this? I think I dumped this on you once in the green room of Dynasty typewriter. But my fiancé is 37.
Okay.
Which is already bad news.
Okay.
She is someone who, like, had this knowing around children, like, wanting children in a way that I've never had.
Mm-hmm. And you're how old, if you don't mind me
29.
Asking? Okay.
But it sounds like what you said, where you're like, I always knew I wanted to be a mom. Mm-hmm. And she wants to have them, like, now.
Mm-hmm.
I basically am a no for now.
You know, it's funny that you say that because I was just telling someone, like, my sister is engaged and they're not going to have kids. And she was like, she always said, I'm on the fence. Like, if I meet a guy that wants them, I'll have them. If I don't, I won't. And I'm like, I get how she used to feel that way in, like, you know, her, like, late 20s, early 30s. But, like, once you have them, it's like you really both have to be committed to wanting kids. It's fucking hard.
Yeah.
Like, and I know everyone's always like, you make it seem so easy. And I'm like, I don't know what I'm doing to do that. But, like, it is difficult.
It's what I wrote down, that I don't see how you so fluidly seem to mom and stand up and arts and all that thing.
Well, I'm just like a true extrovert. Like, I need to be around. I get energy from being around other people. Like, I don't really need, like, alone time or, like, time to myself, which is something I'm working on with my therapist right now. But
you don't need,
like,
alone time.
I don't really.
Not
I don't
from the
think
kids?
I do. From the kids. But, like, I want to be then, like, going out, going to see friends, going to do something, going to do comedy. You know what I mean?
Wow.
Like, I like to go out and, like, do things. And so I think people see me out there doing things and they're like, oh, so it must not, like, but it's like, it is hard when I'm with my, like, when to do all the other stuff, I just get, like, energy and fulfillment from doing social stuff and being out there.
Yeah.
That it's not like, I think a lot of moms are like, well, the end of the day is so hard, I just want to pass out.
Right.
And I'm just like, no, I need to, like, go out and, like, do stuff to feel, like, more.
Right.
I don't know. I'm tired too all the time. I'm tired.
But when you were pregnant and when you just had, you have two kids.
You have two kids.
How old are they?
So my daughter is 4 and my son just turned 2 last week.
Okay. That's like, you're in the thick of it.
Yeah.
Right? That's like, I mean, okay, when you're pregnant, then you're pregnant again. Are you, you're not doing stand-up then, or you are? Like, what's going
well,
on?
Well, it was a little weird because my second kid was born in the pandemic.
Okay.
So I got pregnant in the pandemic
and
had him. Yeah, it was a snow day.
So what about the first kid?
The first kid, I was doing stand-up up until a week before she was born. Like, I fully was, like, doing stand-up at 9.5 months pregnant, and people were like, I remember I talked about this because the New York Times interviewed me as part of, like, a larger article about women stand-ups having babies.
Yeah.
Because it was right around Ali Wong's big thing. And I actually think me and Schumer's babies are, like, a month apart.
Mm-hmm.
But they were like, tell us about doing stand-up. And I was like, well, I did a show, like, right before I gave birth where I squat down on the ground and you could tell the whole audience was like, like they thought I was gonna like topple over or something, like, you know? So I just thought it was fun. And now I see a bunch of my friends are doing stand-up pregnant and it's like, whatever.
Yeah.
You know, I had a lot of energy for my first pregnancy. It was an easy pregnancy. My son was so much harder. I could barely walk. Like, he was sitting on my sciatic nerve. Like, it was, I didn't do stand-up because it was the pandemic. But even if it hadn't been, I don't know if I would have, because I was, it was a harder pregnancy.
Yeah.
Yeah. At the time, I didn't know what was coming. I was just like pregnant. Yeah. But I felt fine. So I just did stand-up.
And how do you feel like about your relationship to stand up now that you're a mom? Has it changed how you feel about it?
Yeah, for sure. Like, I definitely am just, I gotta say, I'm just not like, I don't have the same hunger as like a lot of my friends that are just doing it like as their full time. You know, like Lisa, my co-host of my podcast, is like an amazing like killer headliner. And like, that's what she wants to do, like 4-5 spots a night. Like, that's not in my heart anymore because I just don't have the stamina for that. Like, I would do stand up as much as I'm booked, but I'm also just like not as prolific with the material. It feels like everything that's going on in my brain is like a lot of my brain space is just being taken up on like, what do the kids need and what does my family need?
Right.
And so,
but you don't resent that?
No. Because for me, stand up was never going to be my like, I never saw myself as like a big headlining, selling out stadiums kind of comic. Yeah. I love doing it. I want to keep doing it. I think it's like a great skill and it's fun and it's going to be helpful for like creating television shows or movies or the things that I want to do, but
right.
It's not my, I think that's what it's helped me do. My having kids has helped me sort of just like put stand-up into perspective as like one of the tools in my like toolbox or whatever that I really love and enjoy. I don't think I'll ever stop doing it, but it's not my number one thing like it was when I was in New York and like going hard.
Right. You know? I mean, it's not even my number one thing in that way yeah. anymore. Like in New York specifically, though, it can. And how long were you in New York?
11 years.
I was in New York. It can become so overwhelming, and just your ability to get to spots quickly. Like
yeah.
I could jam them all in. I can't. I can't even like physically get to as many.
Yeah, here. You can never do as much stand-up here as you can in New York, just physically the layout of the city.
Right.
Yeah.
I also don't total, I'm not really of this belief that, like, you know, you have to do, like, 6 spots a night every night. Like,
right.
I think it's bullshit. I think you can do as many as you want, and also if you're writing, that's really what matters.
Yeah. And at the beginning, I do think it's like, yeah, get your reps in. You don't know how to do this yet. But, like, once I've been doing stand-up now for, like, oh my God, like 15 years. So I don't really feel, if I have a new bit, I'll just go work on it at a show or like that I get booked on, but
oh,
I don't
totally.
Really need to like run it 20 times, you know?
Oh,
like,
yeah. Exactly.
So it's just a different thing.
Yeah, you're in it enough. I do feel a little bit like, I don't know if it's jealous, but like when I think about like the superstar male comedians that are obviously all fathers who have like never like, I mean, this is my opinion, like thought about what we're saying of like the children like taking up this headspace and like there being this like sort of like big biological choice, and like, you know, Chappelle, Chris Rock, Eddie Murphy, just kids who knows what their presence is
yeah.
like in their daily lives, and then they get to just kind of seamlessly perform
yeah.
everywhere. And is that just the privilege of being male?
Yeah, and like I don't know who any of their wives are or the mothers of their children are. Like,
oh,
I think that's
one.
Just their yeah, you know what I mean? It's not like
right.
That's just their what they signed up for, you know? So, and it's different because my husband and I are both performers.
Right.
You were asking me, is he a full-time stand-up? He is a stand-up and a writer, and he plays tabletop role-playing games like Dungeons and Dragons for money on the internet.
No.
Yeah, he leads games. He works for this big network called the Glass Cannon. If you're into the Dungeons and Dragons world, check them out.
Okay.
And he will go to like conventions and he does like all kinds of stuff with that. So that was like a pivot that happened in the pandemic when we were all like, how are we gonna pay our mortgage and support our kids? And now it's like we have like a murder podcast and a D&D stream. Like, it's so crazy.
That is insane.
Yeah,
that's like,
and it's just
so
like,
wacky.
And it's like when I was in New York hitting 7 shows a night, it was like, you got to do this, and then you got to get Montreal, and then you'll get late night, and then you'll do that. And it was like, you just thought there was only one road to Rome, and it's like, now there's just a million.
Oh, it's so true.
Yeah.
That, like,
podcasting and TikTok and all the shit that's out there. Like,
all that junk that, like, we thought was mandatory has totally been, like, cut out.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I see people getting it in, like, the craziest ways, and it's always the internet.
of just like shit they're posting of themselves.
Yeah.
I mean, have you seen what happened with Matt Rife?
No, what happened?
Do you know Matt Rife?
I know of, I remember like a Matt Rife, Brandon Wardell Twitter beef a long time ago where he's like, what are you, a male model doing stand up? And then like, I'll see him pop up on Instagram and stuff, but I don't know him personally.
So Matt, I do know him. And he started posting, he was like not getting booked in LA. Basically his stand up career was kind of stalling. And everyone was like, you should post, someone, I forget who told me this, was like, you should post on TikTok. You're like gorgeous. You're stupid looking. Post, you'll do well. He ended up over like a few years, maybe a year and a half even, getting to like 10 million followers on TikTok. And those 10 million followers on TikTok translated to like 2 or 3 million followers on Instagram, which that growth happened in like 6 months. And he is now moving more tickets in America than I think almost like any other comic.
Oh my God, really?
And he like landed this like highly lucrative touring deal and is just...
I haven't seen a second of his stuff. I've seen a couple guys like that. I mean, like, I've been on festivals. I've been at Moon Tower with guys that are like, who is this? And they're like, oh, it's a TikTok guy. And the line's down the fucking block for
these
guys.
So, I know.
You know, everybody's getting in where they fit in.
It's like
Nimesh Patel. I used to do stand up with Nimesh back in New York. Very funny, but like, I didn't really, nothing was really popping off for him. And then he was one of the first guys to get on TikTok and cut up the clips.
Oh, that.
And now Nimesh is sells out everywhere.
Wow.
Yeah, I mean more like clubs and stuff. I don't know if he's Matt
Rife. I wonder how you promo that on TikTok though. Are you on TikTok?
Our podcast is on TikTok. That's what I have on my phone. But I don't have my own.
I don't get how like their videos. How do you say come to a show? I don't understand.
Well, no, I think you build up the fan base of people and then
you send them somewhere else.
Yeah, and also at the end of your videos you have a card that says like Tempe, Arizona next week.
That's right. You need to have the end card.
And then the caption.
And then
or
they buy. Who's buying? I guess people do.
But you know what's funny though is like, because you have a podcast, I have a podcast. I talked to this guy who has a podcast who you probably know as well, but he has a really big following. The podcast has a very big following on TikTok.
Okay.
And I was texting him the other day and I was like, does this translate to you getting a lot of listeners on your podcast? Like if you have a video that hits like a million.
Yeah.
And he's like, not really. So it's interesting what goes A to B, like TikTok to ticket sales, TikTok to listens on your podcast or subscribes or whatever, you know?
Ashley Gavin, who's a friend of mine who has a huge...
Just was at a fest with her. Love her.
Huge podcast. We're having gay sex. She has claimed that TikTok is kind of like the mothership and like everything comes from there. She's like, if she posts a video on TikTok of herself doing stand up, it will like skyrocket the podcast streams.
Wow.
I know.
Interesting.
I guess you just have to throw a lot of shit at the wall.
Yeah.
Now I realize you're supposed to be doing YouTube.
I know.
I don't know. I've totally forgot about YouTube.
But yeah, I forgot about YouTube. And it feels like I actually worked. I wrote on the YouTube. I wrote on the Streamy Awards one year, like right before pandemic, actually.
Uh-huh.
And was like, wow, I did not know this world. The Streamy Awards are like YouTube awards, like for best creator, best new creator, like whatever.
That's hilarious.
And I was just like learning about all these people that have millions and millions and millions of followers. And I was like, I don't know who any of these people are. There were like a couple drag queens I knew because I've written for Drag Race. But like, I was like, who are all these people? It's like a whole nother universe. And I think that's why I was like scared to touch it a little bit.
Well, a lot. And then this is the other thing that will happen is that like the YouTube people will decide to, they're like, we should sell tickets to something because that's how I'm going to make more money. The YouTube people come out, they sell tickets, and then the act itself is like horrendous.
Yeah.
Because
but do people care? They just got to be in a room with them.
Right. I don't think people care.
Yeah.
So like stand-up's dead, whatever. People get upset about the crowd. Do you care about the crowd work clips? People get so upset about it.
I mean, the reason why you have to do crowd work clips is because if you put your material, then people come to your show and they yell out your punchlines to you.
Have you had that happen?
No, Lisa has.
That's so...
And like she's a queen of crowd work, so she puts up like a bunch of crowd work clips. But like, so it's like, and those are funny because they're, you know.
You can burn them.
Yeah. And it was like, who cares? But if you put your material up there,
right?
It's like, then it's on your album. Does anyone care after it's gotten a million streams or clicks or whatever?
Right. I know. It's.
I mean, listen to us having a just a business conversation.
No, they like it. They like
Yeah, they like this?
They do.
Okay.
Anything I say, they're very interested.
Wow, I love that.
Yeah, they'll...
Just devoted, what do you call them?
Colbertos.
Colbertos?
The Colbertos.
I love that.
Yeah, I mean, I think, why wouldn't they want to hear this? this is here. This will be my last, like, inside baseball thing, is that I now have to be one of these people that, like, buys, you bring a camera to your shows.
Oh, yeah, I don't.
You don't do it?
No, because I'm not really doing that.
I know, like, you're right. You're
on
mom.
Ours.
You're a mom. You're a mom.
No,
you
no,
gave
I'm
up
not
on
just
dreams.
Posting a mom. I didn't get, no.
I'm joking.
We post clips of our...
I know.
Of our pod
that's
on
better.
Our Insta.
That's better. It's just.
A... I should. I feel like I should.
No, you shouldn't.
So people
it's
know
so...
my stand up a little bit more, but.
It's a waste. I have to come with the whole thing. I got this camera and I was excited to use it. And I was also a little like self-conscious of setting it up because it's so big and I feel like I'm small. So I didn't want to like be like coming in with like a rig and asking people to move. It just felt weird. And I was like, okay, cool. Like, you know, it was my first set. I did this a week ago. First set on this camera. And I had the worst crowd work experience of my life.
Oh, no.
I would say heckler experience, actually, is more accurate. But I was doing a joke, and this guy in the front row started screaming out. He was like, fuck you!
Whoa.
I know. And I was like, hey, what's going on? He's like, you can't disparage us, okay? I'll disparage you. Fuck you!
Was it about men, the joke?
I think I said something about how... Someone at his table was boring. But I didn't, you know, whatever. Freaked
these
out.
These little babies.
Freaked
they can't
out.
Handle it.
Flipped out. I had to ask him to leave. He was like, are you serious? You're seriously asking me to leave? And he was in the front row and he stood up. So I got kind of like.
You screamed fuck you at me during a show? Yeah, I'm asking you to leave.
Yeah, 100%. You have to leave. You have to leave. He leaves. And then what happens, because it's not at a club where there's no security, it's at one of these like little bar shows or whatever, is that. I had to fucking facilitate the exit, but also the rest of my set, like, I just wanted to just get off at that point. I didn't want to, like, deal with, like, 5 minutes of, like, recovery.
Right.
Like, I was, resuscitating the audience. It was just terrible. But I have more parenting questions for you.
Yeah, okay.
Because this is my life right now.
Yeah.
This is a question that my therapist told me to ask people.
Okay.
In my journey to figuring out if I want to be a mom.
Mm-hmm.
The question is... What makes it rewarding for you being a mom?
I just love them. They're just such funny little people.
Yeah.
Like, that's it. I mean, I just, like, I love that we have a little family and, like, they're just so, my daughter is hilarious. My son is, like, you know, still figuring out talking. But he's like, everything he figures out, it's like wondrous to me. I'm like, did you see he just said this? Like, I don't know, man. It's like, I don't know. It just, for me, it just, they're, it's rewarding. Like, I just like being their mom. So I don't know.
Yeah.
If there's anything more specific.
No, I guess that.
I don't know if that helps.
I understand logically, like, that answer. Mm-hmm. And I think if I were in that position, I would, of course, feel that way about my children. Sometimes it's hard for me to imagine how I would, like, I know how I feel about my dog. So I like, try and multiply that. Mm-hmm. And I'm, like, imagining if it's my kid, that's how I would feel. Then I also think of, I don't know, I'm just dumping on you again.
No, I get it. I mean, you're also, like, young. You have time.
I know.
Like, but you're an old soul, I feel. But
yeah,
you're young. Like, I lived almost my entire 30s child-free, like, and my 20s. Like, I had a lot of fun.
Right.
Like, I traveled, I partied.
Did you egg freeze?
No.
Good
no,
for you.
My mom had six. My mom had six kids. My mom was one of 14 kids. So I was kind of like, I feel like I'm probably pretty fertile. But I tried for probably a year. Like, it was a year of, like, having a couple pregnancies that didn't work out. And, like, then from when I started to when I had a kid.
Wow.
So, but I would say I'm lucky because I did. I'm not saying everybody can wait until I did and then it'll work out. But I had both my kids without any fertility stuff, which was very lucky for me. But I felt like my husband and I both felt like we lived a life. Like, we didn't feel like we were cut. Like, my brother, for example, on the other hand, the youngest of all of us, we have kids the exact same age and he's 9 years younger than me. So his whole philosophy is like, just get it done. And when he's like, when he's like 48, his kids will be out of the house or something like that. Or I think
I don't get that philosophy. This get it done.
Yeah, and I'm like. For that, I'm like, yeah, but then you're 48. Like, and he's like, yeah, but then I can travel and I'll have more money. And I'm like, that's true. You know, there's different philosophies of it. So
right. So maybe I should just do it now.
Yeah. I mean, who like.
But the other thing is I get to be the dude.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say.
I'm not carrying.
She wants to carry.
I don't want to carry.
You don't want to carry.
I'm not staying at home carrying.
So that's a different thing,
too. So basically, I just got to bankroll her.
No, but you gotta be in it is the thing.
I know.
It's like unless she's totally one of these moms that is like, I'm gonna leave my job and you're gonna truly financially support, and she's like, I'll take care of everything. Which I don't know, there's that many moms that exist like that anymore since the 50s.
Yeah.
But like, I don't know, does she have a career? Like, if she has a career and you have a career, like, it's really such a partnership, and like, you gotta both be in it. And I would say the mom role you take on more just because that's the attachment that your kids like have to you, and
right.
like you also have to go through the physical right. labor and like body transformation of having
right.
them. But yeah, like my husband, I have really watched him like figure out like, oh, this is like fully, this has to be 50, you know, you have to get, you know.
Yeah, this is a great,
you watch a lot of guys just be mediocre dads and it's not fun to watch.
Oh my god.
Yeah,
I mean, it's everywhere.
So, yeah.
It's an epidemic.
Yeah. It's an epidemic.
doesn't have to be dark, but this is like a more serious subject to then wind down. But what has it done for your marriage? Can I ask?
Having kids?
Yeah.
You know, it has been challenging at times. After our second child was born, we did go to some marriage counseling over Zoom because it was like we were just not in a good place communication wise. But that was also like a global pandemic,
newborn,
financial stress, a second baby. Like, and honestly, going from one to two kids is huge.
Right.
One kid I found to be honest, easy.
Right.
I found one kid to be easy. That's another thing. I wonder if your partner would be down with just one kid.
Right.
She want two? She wants siblings? Because I do think that with one kid, especially with a two-on-one defense, it can be easier. You know, when you add a second one, that's when I'm like, that gets harder.
Right.
It's just harder.
Yeah. You're like playing with like.
They're so different from each other. You're expecting it to be the same experience over again, but it's not. You're like relearning everything, but the second one's still there. Like the first one's still there growing and needing things. And it's like.
That is,
so it's
sounds fucking wild.
It's a lot. So. Our marriage really, but then we had some counseling. It worked out really great. And I think we're like kind of better than ever. Like we really,
okay,
the other thing too
I love
is
it.
Like, they're like the biggest thing you have in common with each other. So it's
right.
like, you want to sit and tell this dorky story about how your son said a funny thing wrong. And like, your partner's the only kind of person that really appreciates that. Like even your mom or your sister or whatever is like cute, you know, but like
right.
your partner is like, oh my God, I can't. And that's like when he said this, remember that? Like, I don't know. We just have this like bond over the dorky, funny shit that our kids
do. I do love that.
Which
it's like
is
this
fun.
Like shared encyclopedia of like this thing you created.
Yeah. Which is like the family. That's like, you're just making your family.
Yeah.
So,
do you hope your kids are going to be hilarious, right?
They're so, like, my daughter's so funny. And like, I went to go see her do a musical performance last week. And she just like, she was really good at the beginning, answering the music teacher's questions and being really like attentive. And then she sort of zeroed in on me and was like, oh, my mom's here and I'm going to like perform for her. And she was just spinning around and like yelping and like doing, and all the parents were looking at me like, look at this ham. And I was like, this is mortifying.
That's so funny.
But she's funny. Like, she's already, you could tell, likes to get laughs from people.
Oh my God. Maybe you'll bring her on stage with you.
We'll see.
What are you have upcoming shows you can share with my listeners?
Well, honestly, our podcast is called That's Messed Up. It's a podcast about Law and Order SVU. Some people listen to it that don't even watch the show, so give us a shot. It's two comedians talking about SVU, true crime, and then we interview actors from the show. We've interviewed a lot of cool people. We're going to be on tour in June, San Francisco, Tempe, Arizona, Denver, LA, please come see us.
I mean, the two of you are such a good combination. You're both great separately and together.
We're like a very crazy yin and yang, the two of us, because like our lives could not be more different.
You kind of like, this is the longest we've chatted, but like I'm surprised, like you kind of feel like Lisa to me.
Oh,
the
that's
way you
so
talk.
Funny. That's so fun. We've been spending too much time together. We're starting to
like
melt.
Your mannerisms and stuff.
That's so funny.
I know.
Yeah, but like, she's like proudly child free, single. She's 7 years younger than me. We just have very different
perfect though.
Setups. Yeah. She's a youngest child. I'm an oldest child. Like, yeah.
Right. What are you on Instagram? I know
I'm Kara Clank.
Kara Clank.
Everywhere you want to be, I'm Kara Clank.
Kara Clank. Thank you.
This was so fun. Thanks for having me. Thank you.